Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo, the director of AGLCA. Today we are talking with Keith Ruse of Deltaville Boatyard, who is going to help us troubleshoot electrical problems on board and how to use some meters aboard. But before we actually jump in and get started with that, I would like to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. And we encourage all of our listeners out there to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Now I'd like to bring Keith Ruse in, who is, as I mentioned, from Deltaville Boatyard, who is also an AGLCA sponsor. And Keith has been a great supporter of the Great Loop and of loopers. Keith, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your electrical expertise, because that will explain to everyone why I've asked you to join us today.
Thank you, Kim. Be glad to do so. I started my electrical career right out of high school. I entered into the United States Navy nuclear power program, and my field of expertise was electrical. So I was a nuke electrician for 6 years on submarines and then started my own business essentially, and have been working on boats and yachts and some commercial vessels for the past 26 years, primarily focused on systems and, in particular, electrical.
Okay, which, of course, is why I asked you to join us today. Keith also presented at our recent rendezvous in Norfolk and presented a session on meters for troubleshooting aboard that was one of the highest rated presentations at that rendezvous. So earlier this week, a thread popped up on our members' discussion forum regarding issues people were having with tripping the GFIs at typically at newer docks. And it sparked a very popular discussion, got a lot more posts than many of our threads do, with other people chiming in that they were having the same issue and people trying to help to troubleshoot that. So I wanted to bring in Keith as an expert to kind of explain the issue to us. So Keith, to start off, you know, it's kind of perceived that there's a problem with some of these newer power poles at the marinas because boats that have no problems other place are pulling up, plugging in, and suddenly tripping the GFI. So tell us a little bit about what you think is happening there.
Kim, the laws have changed, the regulations have changed on the installation of overcurrent protection and, in particular, ground fault interruption, or there's also what's called ELCI, which is equipment leakage current interruption. So the newer docks are required to have ground fault interruption. And what this does as a protective measure as is at a level in the United States of about 30 milliamps AC current, the relay in the breaker is caused to trip. And that's a protective device that if someone were to fall in the water or be swimming in the water, particularly fresh water, that limit, that 30 milliamp limit is recognized as the point where you lose muscle control. And that's what causes the death of people if there's AC stray current in the water. So the reason why these older boats are experiencing tripping the ground fault interruption is because they've got some sort of AC stray current. And like I said, it's a small amount, 30 milliamps, but it only takes a small amount to kill someone. So the protection on the dock is typically 30 milliamps will trip the GFI. On the boat, the GFI outlets are much smaller amount, 5 milliamps. But in the wet environment, in the marine environment, it can be a killer. Some of the older boats are not equipped with a bonding system. And part of what the bonding system does is it puts all of the underwater metals at the same potential. AC stray current's not going to cause anodes to go away, but what it is a safety problem. So a properly bonded boat with a properly installed alternating current system will not trip the GFI breaker. But with an older boat that there may be an AC stray current problem, it will trip that GFI. One way to check that is to use a clamp-on ammeter, which is readily available. I recommend that all boats carry one. It's a really good troubleshooting tool. So if you wanted to identify if the boat owner had an AC stray current problem, you could hook that clamp-on ammeter up to the shore power connection, let's say at a marina where there's not GFI protection. So in the marina where they're connected to the dock and they're not experiencing a shore power breaker trip problem, you can connect the clamp-on ammeter, and if it's not reading zero, then you have a problem, because what comes in, let's say it's a 120-volt AC system, shore power system, 30 amp, where you have three wires, you have a hot, a neutral, and a ground. Well, what comes into the boat by functionality has to come out of the boat in order to power up the systems with AC. So what's going in should equal what's going out. And in the case of the clamp-on ammeter, that means you should read zero. If, however, you have an AC stray current problem, some of the AC stray currents seek in a different path back to ground. So it'll flow through the water, which means it's not coming back through the shore power cord, and you'll get an imbalance. And that will indicate that the boat has a AC straight current problem. And and typically it would be more than 30 milliamps if it's tripping a GFI on the dock. That's the typical current rating for the GFI. So the boat owner can troubleshoot that problem when they're not tripping a GFI. In saltwater, it's not a big a shock issue as it is in freshwater. Most statistics say that the freshwater is where you really run into a problem, primarily because the human body is very close to the same salinity as the brackish water or the salt water that you may be swimming in. We still don't allow people to swim in our marina because of all the boats that are plugged in. Not that we've had a problem, but it's a good safety precaution. So one way to avoid a problem is don't swim around boats that are plugged into shore power. And in particular, in freshwater, that's primarily where people get killed.
Okay. Well, and that's very good to know, because especially some of our members who are used to boating in salt water and it's not as big of an issue may not realize that as they get closer to freshwater on their loop trip. So it really is a safety issue. And just because you haven't had any problem plugging into shore power before, I guess, Keith, what you're saying is we should all be testing for this anyway.
Yes, that's right, Kim. It's an easy test. You should have the meter capable of doing the test anyway, because it's a great tool to have on board and it's relatively inexpensive. You can buy it at Home Depot or Lowe's, or you can buy some fancier ones that are more expensive, but that basic tool can tell you whether you have a problem or not. That's not to say that the boat next to you at a marina may have a problem. So, you know, it's good practice not to swim around boats that are plugged into shore power.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good to know. So once we've got that meter and we've plugged that in and it's not reading zero, so you're telling us that means we have a leakage somewhere, what would be the next step in troubleshooting that? How do we find where that leakage is coming from?
This is one of the problems that really takes some deductive reasoning, and a trained marine electrician can easily troubleshoot the problem. But essentially what you would do is turn shore power on the dock, and then turn shore power on at the main distribution panel on the boat with all other breakers turned off, all other power supplies turned off, and have your clamp-on ammeter on the shore power cable. And at that point, it should read typically zero. But if you if you're showing an AC straight current without any of the loads energized, then you know you have a problem between the main distribution panel and the receptacle where the short power is plugged in. And that can happen, in particular with metal alloy boats. But further to that, as you energize individually loads, you just record what the reading is when you turn on your air conditioning system. And if it reads zero, then you know it's not the air conditioning system. When you turn on your battery charger, if it reads zero, then you know it's not the battery charger. You turn on your water heater and you get 40 milliamps or 50 milliamps or an amp, then you know it's your 220 volt or 120 volt water heater that's got a path to ground. Some of the more typical places would be the water heater, where you have alternating current going to a device that's in water, like block heaters on diesel engines. I've seen that before, where they're the 110 volt block heaters, while energized, are a source of AC straight current being introduced into the water. So there's a deductive path to find the problem. And then once you find the problem, you further isolate it to what exactly, where the short is. And you got to be, in this particular case, it's not like troubleshooting your battery system. These voltages can kill you. So if you're not comfortable with working on an AC system, alternating current, then I would hire a marine professional electrician to do that for you. And because part of it has to be done energized, it really should be done by an experienced person.
Okay, that's very good advice. Any suggestions that people should look for when they're trying to find a qualified marine electrician? Any credentials we should be asking about?
Yeah, absolutely. There's the American Boat and Yacht Council has a certification program. I'm a ABYC certified electrician. You can go to their webpage, and they have a technician locator. And when you're in different areas, you can ask different people that have been in those areas before for a recommendation. That would be my first course of action, would be to go to that dealer locator, or if you have a good relationship with a boatyard, when my customers, if I don't go to the boat to troubleshoot the problem, they'll ask me, you know, let's say they're in Coral Gables or Cape Coral, Florida, and I have experience with someone down that way, you know, I'll tell them to call that person mm-hmm. and feel comfortable that they can troubleshoot the problem.
Okay. And we also do often see posts on our discussion forum with people asking for advice on who to call for all different services in particular areas. So, you know, there's a network of a few thousand people in AGLCA that may also be able to suggest somebody for you, so that's helpful. So what we're kind of seeing, and I had heard about this issue before, but what we're seeing and is kind of being perceived as a problem at certain marinas is really just them upgrading to the new codes and really improving safety, which is something, of course, is always a good thing. But it does appear that this issue is going to continue and become more widespread as additional marinas are built or upgrade. But again, as Keith said, it seems to be something we really want to be testing for anyway before we have that problem with tripping a GFI. I'm going to pause for a minute and play a message from one of our sponsors. When we come back, we'll jump into some other meters perhaps that Keith might recommend we keep aboard and use to troubleshoot. Back in a minute.
Northport Bay Boatyard is a complete marine service facility located on Grand Traverse Bay in Northport, Michigan. They feature over 85,000 square feet of heated storage, and they are offering loopers a 10% discount on heated storage, as well as a winter labor rate of $75. That's a $10 discount off their usual rate. For more information, visit www.npbby.com or call 231-386-5151. Northport Bay Boatyard is a proud Commander sponsor of AGLCA.
We are coming to you live this morning. We will then archive the issue for or the episode for people to listen to later. But if you are listening to us live this morning and have a question for Keith, you can call us at 877-497-1815. Keith, to continue on, you just did the presentation, as I mentioned recently, on meters to troubleshoot problems aboard. Give us another suggestion on a meter that we should keep at hand to troubleshoot some issues that may come up.
Well, I've got a short list of multi-purpose tools that every boat should have. And then if you drill down a little bit further, every boat should have tools specific to their boats that are tools that only apply necessarily to their boat. But the general tool list is you'd like to have a digital multimeter on board, and it doesn't have to be a very expensive one. They can be multi-function and be quite expensive, but generally speaking, a digital multimeter. And again, you can get those at big box stores. A clamp-on ammeter, and now there are clamp-on ammeters available that perform the functions of a digital multimeter as well. So you can actually combine those two. The digital multimeter, the purpose of that tool is to be able to check voltage, 12 volt, 24 volt, 120 volt AC, 220 volt AC. You can check continuity, which is resistance and measured in ohms, which is the omega sign on the multimeter. The clamp-on ammeter has the advantage of if you clamp around just one wire with the clamp-on ammeter, it will tell you how many amps are flowing through that wire, which is a pretty good troubleshooting tool. You can tell if a piece of equipment is getting power. You can tell if that piece of equipment is drawing the proper amount of amperage. For instance, if you had a breaker that was tripping and it didn't seem like there was anything out of the ordinary, and let's say it was a 15 amp breaker, and you put your clamp on ammeter on one single wire and you're reading 10 amps, then you would be able to deduce that the breaker was defective. So it's a good troubleshooting tool. One of the things that we recommend is that you know how to use those tools, and it can be a pretty short tutorial to figure out how to use these tools. And what's good about knowing how to use them is you may not be able to personally troubleshoot the problem, but if you can call or email your technician that you use, we routinely troubleshoot things from afar. We ask our customer, okay, do you have power at this point? And if they know how to use their multimeter, they can check it and say yes or no. And then we can methodically go down the line and check until we get to the component that's not working and troubleshoot it. So you don't necessarily have to be an expert troubleshooter, but if you know how to use your digital multimeter and or clamp-on ammeter, then that will allow you to adequately measure and troubleshoot. One of the other tools we use is a surface pyrometer. We use that to measure temperature, and that can be a good indicator. One of the problems with high resistance connections is that the heat builds up, but it does not trip the breaker because the current's not going up. Where we see this routinely is with boats that are plugged into to shore power with air conditioning running, and over time they'll burn up their cords, and the breaker either on the dock or on the boat never trips. That's probably the number one source of fires on boats, is the high resistance connection on shore power, in particular with air conditioning that's running 24/7. So with a surface pyrometer, you can measure that temperature, and you can see an indicator of whether a problem is developing or not. Normally, you know, unless you have an acute problem, the surface pyrometer is used for trend analysis, where on one day with an ambient temperature outside of 80 degrees, you have a temperature on your shore power cord of 80 degrees. Well, the next day, if it's 80 degrees Fahrenheit out and you check the shore power cord and it's 95 degrees or more, then you know you have a problem that needs to be addressed, which overcurrent protection is not going to provide a trip because of the high resistance and the heat versus increased amperage.
So, Keith, is that something that should be checked daily, weekly? What's the frequency that you would suggest on that?
If you're plugged into shore power 24/7, you know, when you're cruising, if you're daily disconnecting and moving on to another marina, I would say just check it every week or so, just to make sure that you don't have a problem. One of the other ways to visually check it is to look at the end of the cord, in particular the female end. You know, if you've got to disconnect shore power to move, just take a quick glance at those connections. From a preventative maintenance standpoint, you can clean the shore power inlet connections and make sure you've got a good tight connection.
Okay. And how much is that, the meters that we've talked about so far, rough estimate, you know, can you expect to pick those up for $20, $200? Just give us a ballpark.
For a meter that I would recommend, it'd be the multimeter probably be around $100, and the clamp-on amp meter somewhere in the same range. That's
okay.
For a decent quality, not super, super complicated, but good quality and functional.
Well, and it also sounds like those could be a big money saver in the end because you could prevent a problem, but also the service that you mentioned that you do for your customers where they can call you from afar and you can help walk them through that troubleshooting. Even if they do find an issue, it sounds like having isolated it is probably going to save them money if they do end up bringing in an electrician.
Yep.
So that sounds like money very well spent. One question that I do have is in the discussion forum, and I'm not sure that you'll be able to answer this. Let me preface it by saying I may be putting you in a difficult situation, but one of the members mentioned getting a leakage meter to help troubleshoot the problem with tripping the GFI. How is that different from what you've discussed? And he talked about, you know, having 15 or so people chip in $20 each. So if my math is correct, that's like a $300 item. How is that different from what you've already talked about, or is it not different?
A leakage meter is kind of general.
Okay, that's what I thought might be the issue.
Yeah, a clamp-on ammeter will easily show the problem properly used. I've done that test on many, many boats, in particular boats that thought that they may be experiencing a problem, and it turned out to be that their neighbor might be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an American Boat and Yacht Council certified corrosion technician as well, and we use multimeters and silver chloride reference cells to test for DC stray current, galvanic corrosion, the hull potential of the boat. We look for the functionality of galvanic isolators. We look at isolation transformers for proper wiring. A corrosion tech can do a pretty comprehensive test on a boat in less than 4 hours, depending on the size of the boat. You can find if you have a problem or not within an hour of arrival on the boat. It's a short, easy test for an experienced corrosion tech. We provide those routinely, and a lot of the time, there's no problem. But if there is a problem with DC stray current or AC stray current, we can identify that there's a problem very quickly. But the further troubleshooting to find where the problem is emanating from, that's the part that takes some time.
Right. Okay. Any other tools on that short list you mentioned that all boats should have?
Well, I mentioned the digital multimeter, the clamp-on ammeter, and the surface pyrometer. And I think those, knowing how to use those three items, can save a lot of time and a lot of money It also, if you're in a remote location where there's not a technician available, it enables the boat owner to personally troubleshoot with guidance.
Great. You also mentioned a list specific to your boat, so I don't know how much of that you can really share with us, being that we've got so many different kinds of boats out there. But is there kind of a generic tool list you can give us that would be specific to our own boats?
Well, what I like to see folks be able to do is be able to change fuel filters successfully. So there are tools associated specifically with your main engines and generators that you need to have on hand. I like to see people be able to change a raw water pump impeller. Again, specific tools for removing the impeller. I'd also like to see people be able to do basic troubleshooting electrically. So what I recommend to my customers is that you hire one of our mechanics or your personal mechanic to come on board, and the boat owner have bought the proper tools, and then the mechanic supervises while the owner does the job personally. Then you've got the confidence. You know you have the tool for the job. You know what to do. For instance, you know, turn off the seacock before you take the raw water pump apart on the main engine. You have a standard operating procedure, and you can write that down. You can put the tools for a specific job into a kit. So if you do have a problem and you do need to bleed your fuel system, you're confident that you've got all of the tools. You've done the job at least once, so you've got a visual on it. One other tool that I do recommend for every boat is some method, and most boats have them, a method of taking a photograph, an iPad, an iPhone, or in a digital camera. So before you start a project, you take a picture of what you're going to disassemble. So when you go to put it back together, you have a record of it. One of those uses would be like for a serpentine belt on the front of a John Deere engine. You need a breaker bar in order to get the belt tensioner loose. It's a very tight spring. So you've got to have the proper tool to relieve that tension. And then there's a routing path for the serpentine belt. So if you take a picture of it first, or you draw a small schematic on the front of the engine with like a permanent marker, then you've got a record of how it goes back on. So you carry all these spares, but if you don't have the tools to do the job, then they're not as valuable.
Those are also great tips. We really appreciate that. We are starting to run out of time. Keith, tell people how they can get in touch with Deltaville Boatyard if they have more questions or if they need some work done.
DeltavilleBoatyard.com is our webpage, and that's pretty intuitive. There's an opportunity there that you can email me. My email address is keith@DeltavilleBoatyard.com. I'm happy to answer questions. We work on and get a lot of loopers ready to go, and we've had multiple boats successfully cross their wake, and we think it's cool.
And as I mentioned, Deltaville Boatyard is an AGLCA sponsor, so Keith, we thank you for that and for all of the support that you give the loopers. If anyone out there is in need of more information on the Great Loop itself, our website is www.greatloop.org. We will be coming to you again next week with another new episode. As loopers on the seasonal schedule continue their trek north, we will be talking about the Hudson River, and we'll have a representative from the Historic Hudson River Towns Incorporated, which is an organization that was put together to promote some of those towns there along the Hudson River. So they'll walk us through what we can see and do as we travel up the Hudson. Until then, thank you for listening, and safe cruising. Keith, thank you again.
You're welcome, Kim. Thank you.